Hi, everyone. Hope you had a great weekend. I'm Tony Chen, and this is Fish and Bits, a business and data podcast on the world of seafood. Today, I'm going to discuss how disease and animal challenges can cripple entire aquaculture markets, and how a combination of farmers, suppliers, and researchers have to respond in order to fight disease outbreaks. In particular, I'd like to review a few outbreaks that have happened around the world and how they impact the business behind aquaculture. First, I'll note some significant outbreaks that have occurred through history. Then, I'll break down the business impacts, such as how the EMS outbreak in shrimp was the catalyst for the rise of South American shrimp. Lastly, I'll discuss how the industry is fighting to stop outbreaks in the future. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode, so let's dive in. When we talk about disease outbreaks in aquaculture, the direct impact on farms is obviously devastating. No matter the species, shrimp, salmon, tilapia, and shellfish, they've all had to overcome significant health challenges. It's not uncommon for a disease outbreak in aquaculture that results in 50% or higher total mortality rates. From a farm perspective, any loss has immediate financial impacts. You are doubling production costs and immediately losing on the ability to meet long-term sales contracts. Add in the fact that in aquatic environments, there's almost no ability to quarantine the spread of a disease, so any outbreak can immediately move from farm to farm, and farmers really can't do anything about it. And with how young the industry is, many markets have simply not had to deal with many outbreaks. While historically aquaculture has existed for thousands of years, modern aquaculture, where companies export globally as we know it right now, has only been around since the 1960s. And these outbreaks all typically follow the same pattern. First, farmers start to see a mass mortality event at their farms, oftentimes without any warning. If enough farmers see the same trend, they start to give the outbreak an extremely generic name. Currently, oyster farmers in the southern United States, like in North Carolina where I grew up, are experiencing a health situation that has been aptly named summer mortality. Reports coming from farmers there are saying their oysters seem healthy one day and then dying in mass the next, and farms over this last summer have reported losses of up to 80%. After identifying that an outbreak is happening, next, we see a mad scramble to figure out what's going on. For years following the early mortality syndrome, or EMS outbreak in shrimp across Asia in 2009, scientists and researchers searched for years to find the infection vectors. Water channels, environmental toxins, and viruses were all studied. Eventually, it was discovered that a specific bacteria was the cause of EMS, and farmers eventually developed management techniques to address the challenges. And after we identify how to address and mitigate a disease, we typically see an extremely strong response to better monitor and regulate future outbreaks, in addition to the development of new therapeutics like vaccines to prevent future outbreaks. In salmon, we've seen this infrastructure develop in response to ISA, or infectious salmon anemia, which decimated production volumes in Chile. During a five-year period from 2005 to 2010, the overall production of Chilean salmon farms dropped a total of 75% from 400,000 metric tons to 100,000 tons. Since that outbreak, all salmon-producing countries now test regularly for the presence of the disease, and strong regulations force the closure of sites if ISA is detected. There have also been the development of vaccines to protect salmon against ISA by the large pharmaceutical companies like Elanco, Merck, and Zoetis. This pattern of fighting outbreaks and epidemics is similar to the response that we see in other markets. For example, you can map these same processes to the world's response to COVID and the development of therapeutics and vaccines to keep it from happening again. That said, when it happens in aquaculture, the impact on a particular market is actually a little bit different. Typically, you would expect a market to bounce back after we find a solution to a disease. But for aquaculture, that hasn't always been the case. In aquaculture, a disease outbreak can completely cripple an entire market indefinitely. Let me explain with the events of what has happened with the ongoing case of EMS and shrimp. The EMS outbreak didn't just decimate overall stocks at farms. Its longer-term impact has completely shifted the dynamics of the industry. In 2009, the major producing shrimp countries were China, Thailand, Malaysia, and Vietnam. They were subsequently each hit with EMS. Thailand, for example, lost 54% of their total production, and scientific reports calculate their losses during that period to equate to over $11 billion and an estimated loss of over 100,000 jobs. Even now, more than 10 years after the outbreak, production volumes have never climbed back to the levels prior. The same can be said for many of the other top producing regions that I mentioned. But why is that the case? By 2014, the industry had discovered the cause, and farmers were already putting in management and biosecurity practices to mitigate the risk of EMS, even as it continued to show up in other regions. The reasons are a little bit more complex, and they serve as a very important case study for the future of aquaculture. While the outbreak of EMS marked the decline for a number of countries, that time point lines up perfectly with the start of exponential growth in what we've seen as now the largest producers of shrimp in the world, India, Ecuador, and Indonesia. Rabobank, the largest agricultural bank in the world, has stated that there seems to be a shift where the future of shrimp farming may be moving from Southeast Asia into South America. Let's take a look at the reasons behind this shift, and it's a combination of consumer demand, aquaculture supply chains, and governmental regulations. When an outbreak occurs, the demand for a global export product like shrimp doesn't just adjust immediately. Even as prices climb, consumers at the global level will still continue to buy shrimp, and that leaves a gap in the supply of shrimp across the world. At a certain point, other countries see this opportunity to establish their own market and secure a percentage of the market share. Unlike agricultural products, which may be limited to specific geographies, industries like shrimp farming still have untapped countries where they can expand. This gap in supply, along with high profits for places that are able to avoid the outbreaks, lead to a huge investment in aquaculture supply chains. And that's the next reason behind the exponential growth of new countries. In order to support a growing aquaculture market, there is a long list of infrastructure that needs to be established to support growers. Feed mills, processing plants, labor, and shipping resources are all necessary to establish a commercial aquaculture export market. For global suppliers, they have to choose which markets to support, and it's easier to support growing new markets than recovering ones. You see this happening in Ecuador right now. For example, all three major fish feed companies, Biomar, Skretting, and Cargill, have announced plans in the last year to expand their feed production capabilities, backed largely by Ecuador's rise to prominence as the world leader in farmed shrimp. The last reason is regulations, and it's very much so connected to the two other challenges I've described. When you look at how quickly EMS hit some of these countries, the loss in business, jobs, and momentum for the sector was practically stopped overnight. While the response to fight a disease epidemic is well established, it takes a strong regulatory system that is able to enact and enforce protocols. And that just is not the case for many of the countries that we saw EMS impact. It's just a much simpler solution for politicians to ignore the industry and place their focus elsewhere instead of helping to build the market back up and risk another outbreak. Now, the case of EMS is an extreme example of the downstream impacts that can occur from a disease outbreak, but parts of this story we continue to see repeated around the world in different aquaculture sectors, and particularly in fragmented markets. Regardless, how the industry responds to outbreaks like this will be one of the topics I follow closely as the market continues to grow. But what else can be done? The last segment I want to touch on are to highlight some of the challenges and work developing when it comes to mitigating these diseases in aquaculture. In human health, the development of vaccines are probably some of the most significant scientific advancements when it comes to fighting health issues. Most people are familiar with RNA vaccines now due to COVID, but surprisingly, RNA vaccines for fish have actually been studied and commercially deployed in salmon for many years now. While it's viable to develop vaccines to protect fish against diseases, the challenge of getting them deployed is a whole nother problem. Just like with humans, fish vaccines currently need to be injected, meaning that in order to vaccinate a farm, you have to operationally figure out how to inject millions of animals on land. The salmon industry has developed automated injection machines, but the results from these can still be pretty spotty. Fish are typically vaccinated pretty early in their life cycle, so they're fairly small, and it's very common for an injection not to reach the animal's bloodstream, rendering it useless. The holy grail for fish vaccines has been the pursuit of an oral vaccine. Many venture-funded companies have been working on developing oral solutions such as Feedvax and ViAqua, but they unfortunately haven't reached anything of commercial scale just yet. As a result, the vaccines and the costs associated with them are still an expensive operation for farmers, and oftentimes they choose instead to pass on vaccinating their farm. Another important component that COVID made the world acutely aware of is testing. In order to monitor outbreaks and plan mitigation efforts, it's important to have proper records of what's happening at farms. In established markets, most farms have a systematic approach to screening for diseases frequently, typically using PCR tests. In addition, there's also plenty of work happening to develop better tests. There are numerous companies working to develop better genetic tests, blood tests, and even environmental DNA tests to help farmers better understand what is happening in and at their farms. Moving forward, we will unfortunately continue to see health challenges spur up across the world as aquaculture continues to scale. But I do expect that institutions, companies, and governments will continue to get better at responding to health outbreaks, leading to better, predictable livelihoods for farmers around the world. That's it for today, guys. Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed learning about the impact of diseases in aquaculture. Consider leaving us a review and sharing this podcast with a friend. It would really help us out a lot. Stay tuned for our episodes each Monday, and we'll talk again next week. Thank you.